Chapter 20 of Genesis. And Abraham journeyed from thence toward the south country, and dwelled between Kadesh and Shur, and sojourned in Gerar. And Abraham said of Sarah, his wife, "She is my sister." And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night, and said to him, "Behold, thou art but a dead man, for the woman which thou hast taken, for she is a man's wife." But Abimelech had not come near her, and he said, "Lord, wilt thou slay also a righteous nation? Said he not unto me, 'She is my sister'? And she, even she herself, said, 'He is my brother.' In the integrity of my heart and innocence of my hands, have I done this?" And God said unto him in a dream, "Yeah, I know that thou didst this in the integrity of thy heart, for I also withheld thee from sinning against me. Therefore, suffer I thee not to touch her. Now therefore, restore the man his wife, for he is a prophet, and he shall pray for thee, and thou shalt live. And if thou restore her not, know that thou shalt surely die, thou and all that are thine." Therefore, Abimelech rose early in the morning and called all his servants and told all these things in their ears. And the men were sore afraid. Then Abimelech called Abraham and said unto him, "What hast thou done unto us? And have I offended thee that thou hast brought on me and on my kingdom a great sin? Thou hast done these unto me that ought not to be done." And Abimelech said unto Abraham, "What sawest thou that thou hast done these things?" And Abraham said, "Because I thought, surely the fear of God is not in this place, and they will slay me for my wife's sake. And yet indeed she is my sister. She is the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother. And she became my wife. And it came to pass, when God caused me to wander from my father's house, that I said unto her, 'This is thy kindness which thou shalt show me unto me at every place, whither we shall come, say of me, he is my brother.' And Abimelech took sheep and oxen and men servants, women servants, and gave them unto Abraham, and restored him Sarah his wife. And Abimelech said, 'Behold, my land is before thee. Dwell where it pleases thee.' And unto Sarah he said, 'Behold, I have given thy brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Behold, he is to thee a covering of the eyes unto all that are with thee and with all others.' Thus she was reproved. So Abraham prayed unto God, and God healed Abimelech and his wife and his maidservants, and they bare children. For the Lord had fast closed up all the wounds of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife."
Any thoughts, any ideas, any input? Yes?
It's always kind of amazed me when they would give men servants, female servants, and donkeys and goats and whatever they would bless them with, because we don't live in that kind of a society. But that's always amazed me. I would think, if I were given people and livestock, and my first thought would be, "Holy cow, I've got to feed all these people. What am I going to do with them?"
That's why the other person's giving them away.
Yeah. But that's always amazed me. But yeah, it's supposed to be a blessing to have all those. And I suppose if you're in that place, it would be okay. It's amazing to me. From a mundane perspective, I suppose.
We'll cover that. Yes, Susan.
I just think it's surprising that Abraham has repeated the same thing that already happened a couple of years ago.
We'll talk about that as well. Seems strange, doesn't it? Anybody else has any ideas, thinking?
An interesting interplay between Genesis 12, when he goes down to Egypt, although on the surface it's similar, but it doesn't appear the king takes her for the same reason. And also interesting interplay between Lot and his daughters, as far as I can get into it a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
But the interplay between the reason why Lot would offer his daughters, who he was sparing, and then you know what that what was going on.
Yeah, we have a good view of that now. LA.
It's funny because on both of these two events of telling the king that she was his sister, it doesn't discuss how Sarah is dealing with this situation. She's in great jeopardy here, and she's praying like crazy, and her faith had to be strong for her not to say, hey, I'm married.
Okay. We'll cover that as well. All these questions are fascinating questions, aren't they? And input. Because, yes. Okay. All right, Susan.
I think it also illustrates the heart of God towards women.
Yes.
Because the men who should be protecting them from the lustful gaze of other men are not doing their job. And yeah. God has to step in, this is the second time now, and rescue one of his daughters. God has a very respectful attitude towards women.
Oh, you noticed that?
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay. I mean, he's not a male chauvinist.
Maybe third. Thinking about Lot's daughters.
Yeah, right. Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's popular,
isn't
it? Yeah, he is.
All right. Well, let's just begin, okay? I want to talk to you about a few things. Now, I can write on this blackboard a date. What is that? 377 years since the flood, or about that time, within a plus or minus a year, maybe 378 by now. Well, I want to tell you this is very important, because why? We find out, when we look at this thing, what was going on in the minds of these people, which would not go on our minds. The reason is because we have wonderful hindsight. But we don't know what's ahead. All right? And they, at their lifetime, they didn't know what was ahead. All they knew was what was behind, just like we did. All right? But they're a lot closer to that point in time than we are, right? So we have to kind of put ourselves into those shoes. The first thing we're going to talk about is this place where Abraham journeyed toward the south, and he dwelt in a place called what? Okay. What was it called? Why was it called that? When was it called that? Now, it's interesting. Now, we have to look at these words. Now, the reason why we have to look at these words is because we have to go back in time and find out that wasn't the name of the place where, during Abram's time, or Abraham's time. It became known as that much later in time. Remember, names, God is named after an event, not before. But there was a name of this particular city that had a different name at one time. Why don't you go back to Genesis? We're going back now. 14th chapter. Genesis 14 and verse 7. And they returned and came to Ishbipat, which is Kadosh. Right. So that was his original name. Now, it had an unusual name. What was it? Do you know what that name means? Spring of Judgment. So now, Abraham's at this place called Spring of Judgment, not the place of Kadosh. Now, if with that name, as we go forward in this story here on the 20th chapter, we have a little bit of picture of why it was called the Spring of Judgment. What happened here? A judgment came down. Did you not notice it? A judgment came down. That's what this original name was. And there was a spring there. Well, why would you have to have spring for water your cattle? And or your livestock, and even have water for yourself. But because what took place here tells you a little bit, okay? So I'm going back and say, forget about the name Kadesh, because it came in later in time, much later in the history of Israel, when they were in Israel at the point in time. It didn't come until many years after him. All right? So now we have a little bit of picture. So now we have to say, okay, what was the judgment? All right. I'll go back to Genesis chapter 20. And this is not going to be a very long message today, because I'm keeping it relatively short, because Daniel has a very long message to give to you. But, verse 2. And Abram said to his wife, she is my sister, said of Abraham, she is my wife. Oh, wait, before I go there, I want to go another word here, verse 2, chapter 1. And he says, and the sewer, by the way, sewer just means a wall or a border town, a border area. And the word of Ga'ir, you know what Ga'ir means? A lodging place. It got that name because that's where Abraham lodged. All right? It became known as that because everything is centered around what person here?
Abraham.
All right? A judgment was done there and associated with Abraham, and he dwelt there, or he lodged there for a while. So it became known as the place of lodging. Talking about Abram's world, not, we'll get into this king in a minute, but not in their world, but in the world where Abraham was. Because everything centered, the whole Bible is centered around, at this point in time, around the life of Abraham. And so all the subject matter is going to be around him and his wife and nobody else. You understand what I'm saying so far? Isn't it fascinating? Spring of Judgment. That's the name of the place where judgment was placed down. And Abram lodged there for a while. Verse 2. God, he says, now she is my sister. And Abimelech, king of Ga'ir, or that lodging place, sent and took Sarah. All right. What does Abimelech mean? My father is the king. My father is the king, or Melech is father. That's an unusual word, isn't it? Now, we think, oh, that was his name. He was born with that name, right? No, it doesn't say that. He is, what? Saying that my father is Melech. My father is king. That's what he is saying, this individual person. Now, very fascinating terminology. Remember, it was only about 337 years. I know maybe we know that Shem was still alive. And maybe his brothers, they had died, but not too very long ago in the point of history here. They didn't die immediately after the flood. They had children, and they probably lived pretty ripe old age like Shem did. So all of this part of the world, including Egypt, chapter 12, were fully aware of the patriarchs that came from the flood. They knew who they were, and they knew who they came from. They would have known their ancestry better than you and I would know ours. The reason why they know better than ours is because we move all over the place. And our relatives move all over the place. We have no idea where any of half of them are at. You know? But they didn't move all over the place. They probably stayed in the general area where they were appointed to be. Remember in Genesis? Where the four brothers are supposed to live? That's where they lived most of the time. And their family lived there most of the time. Except for one person. Who was it?
Nimrod.
Yes.
Which brings a question as to the first verse of this is why Abraham is always journeying.
Because he was commanded to journey. And he all used that word wandering. Because God said, I want you to go someplace. Where do you want to go? Into Canaan. Okay. Now, what was Abraham looking for? Hebrews? Book of Hebrews? looking for a city that no man made. That seems weird, way back in 377. Why was he looking for a city that no man made? You think maybe God told him there's a city out there that you, no man made, but I have made? And you're going to dwell there? You're going to live there? So he was a tent dweller, wasn't he? He didn't live in houses. He lived in a tent. Now, we know that his family later made houses, made homes, they made cities, they built things. But he himself, he was still wandering around. Now, this is not a... We use this word nomad. Well, you know, bite the bullet here a minute. We're only talking about one particular person here. And the men that were with him and his servants are with him. They were the ones that had to wander. Why they had to wander more? They weren't nomads having no place to go. Abraham was looking for and going to the place where God was going to be there. Simple as that. He put a lot of altars up in his lifetime. Because that's where God spoke to him, and therefore he built an altar. Now, it's very strange here with Abimelech, verse 3. I find this kind of funny. Now listen to this conversation, Joyce. There was a dream. When did the dream come? At night. The dream came to my father, the king. All right? And it said, "You surely are a dead man." And boy, that scared him to death, didn't it? Now, here... Abimelech says, wait. What's going on here? Adonai, you're not going to slay a righteous nation, are you? Or a righteous goyim, are you? Now, that's an unusual statement, don't you think? Now, wait a minute. Why would he ask that question? What happened the previous chapters?
Sodom and Gomorrah.
Sodom and Gomorrah. And what was the issue that Abraham said?
Righteousness.
Now, we're in a place, he's gone, and guess what Abraham was wondering? Is this like Sodom and Gomorrah? That's what goes through your mind and my mind if we were there, and now Sodom was a trade route, one of the major trade routes for you to go and do, sell your goods and back and forth. Now that place is completely wiped out. Yes?
Geographically, not that far apart either, is it?
No. It's actually due east. No. Sodom is due east of Gerar. Pretty close to it, anyway. We haven't got to Beersheba. I'll talk about that today. But I just want to bring you to the point of focusing our mind of what's going on. And now this man said, "Now wait a minute, are you gonna slay me and wipe out the people?" And God says, "Well, no." Because he said, "I didn't know. She's my sister." And it seems, in one way, the very next verse, verse 6. Yes?
It does seem kind of odd on the face of it that God says, "You are a dead man." He never says, "I'm going to wipe your people out." But yet he chose to the conclusion, "Are you going to slay this whole nation?"
Yes.
And you do have to wonder, why would he jump to some kind of conclusion like that?
I'm sorry, what? That's what he did in Sodom and Gomorrah. Yeah, wiped out the entire nation.
But the difference is that Sodom as a nation, if you want to call Sodom a nation, they all were.
Yes.
Whereas in this situation, it was Abimelech's own personal thing. But there is a difference.
This particular girl was not like Sodom and Gomorrah.
No.
It was nothing like Sodom and Gomorrah. It didn't even come close to being like Sodom and Gomorrah. All right? Sometimes we think all the world was like Sodom and Gomorrah. No, just Sodom and Gomorrah and two or three other times near him. Yes.
Though the Egyptians did suffer for Pharaoh's stubbornness.
Right. Well, we're not there yet. You're jumping the gun too fast on me here, son. All right. Now, he said in the dream, you know, verse 3 says, he came in a dream by night and says, "You're a dead man." That's the only word we have, okay? Then he, Abimelech, cries out to God and says, "What?" He said, "She's my sister." Now, it's funny. Verse 6, "And Elohim said to him in a dream." Oh, wait a minute. So I'm like a different dream, a secondary dream. Like, oh, look, this guy had two dreams. First dream is you're a dead man, and now he's awake, right? He's crying out to God, what are you doing, killing me and killing everybody around here? Well, listen, God, he said this. And then he had another dream. That's what it looks like. It's not necessarily the same dream. I'm thinking it's like two different dreams. One was at night, and this one now just woke him another again in a dream. He says, okay, I know you didn't know. What did he say about him? What did he say about ambivalent?
He had integrity.
So was ambivalent kind of like jumping the gun when he says, a righteous nation? No, he wasn't. What was God's name during the time of Abimelech's life?
El Shaddai.
El Shaddai. Why was it El Shaddai?
Destroyer.
The one that purges, pludges, and destroys and wipes things out. That's how he got a name. And he introduced himself to Abraham as that way, right? Remember he said, I am El Shaddai. Oh, wow. You know, what do you think Abraham think? Ooh, this guy who purges things together, wipes things out. I better pay attention to him. Well, he didn't say maybe, he just did. And he said something very fascinating in verse 7. Now, no word shows up in the Torah now. What's the new word that showed up in verse 7?
Prophet.
First time it shows up. Didn't show up in any place else. And we think of, you know, maybe somebody else was a prophet. But here the word shows up. Now, what do you think the word prophet means?
Ambassador.
Okay.
It's not the same as messenger.
I'm sorry, what?
It's not the same as messenger. Not like
an
apostle.
Not like an angel. Not like a messenger. Yes.
A prophet for
where's
tell.
Where's your computer?
Oh, I didn't. A prophet foretells. He foretells the purpose and the plan of God.
Okay.
He teaches.
Okay. Now, what did he warn him? He says, "All right, you must restore the man's life, for he's a prophet, and he will pray for you, and you shall live. But if you not restore, know that you're dead. You and yours." This is where the plurality comes in. Not just you, but all of yours. Yes.
Is it the first time he's putting his authority in someone else?
No. Okay. Now we're getting to a point. Yes.
So what is the difference between an apostle and a prophet?
An apostle?
And a prophet, yeah.
One has been sent for different reasons. A prophet is different. All right? Apostle Paul mentions that. Some apostles, some prophets. Mm. So the difference between those words, even in Greek. Yes.
I like what Adam Clark actually says about this. He says, Abraham was not a prophet in the present general acceptance of the term. But then he goes on to say that the ideal original meaning was to pray, entreat, make supplication, and kind of interpret the meaning of that.
Okay.
So the first person that strikes to my mind when I hear that definition of a prophet is Job.
Is who?
Job.
Job, okay.
Because after all those bad things happened to Job, you know, God asked him to pray for his three friends kind of thing. And so that is what a prophet was supposed to do.
And I cannot go through it today at all, but the book of Job is a entire book of prophecy. Everything in it has to do with prophecy coming down to the final end of this world. But I'm not going to go there today. All right? I can't go there.
Yeah.
Okay, the prophet, what it really means, it can mean, okay, an inspired person. But it means one who speaks. Every prophet. Now be careful what I'm going to tell you. I'll explain this, what it means. The prophet of Elohim does a different than any other, quote, terminology we use, prophet or a speaker. He is speaking for, not himself. He is speaking for Elohim. Yes.
I also noticed that, like all the prophets, most of them ate God's word, or they ate the straw.
They have stuff. Right. They have to partake in something, and when you eat, you have to really chew in the cud for a while, you know, and then finally swallow it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's belly aching, you know.
Yeah.
Not too good. They may taste good, but may not taste good. May taste bitter. Most of the time, prophecy is not a very pleasant thing to foretell. But anyway, to get back into this thing, I want to go into this thing so we have a little bit about prophecy. So we have known. I want to go to the book of Numbers. Book of Numbers, 11th chapter. Now, by the way, when I speak and I talk about the Spirit, I'm talking about the Spirit of the Creator of heaven and earth. I'm talking about the Spirit of the Father. When I talk about Spirit, I'm talking about that one. I'm not talking about anything else. All right, I want to make that perfectly clear with you. All right, now, verse 25, Numbers 11, 25. Then the Lord, or Yahuwah, came down in a cloud and spoke to him, that was Moses, and took the Spirit that was upon him, Moses, and placed the same Spirit upon the 70 elders. And it happened that when the Spirit rested upon them, they prophesied. All right. Now, so we get into someone like Abraham, and here the Father is saying he is a prophet. How did he become a prophet? Because the Spirit of the Father, the Spirit of the Creator of heaven and earth, was upon him. He didn't come up with this thing on his own. And that's the first time Abraham was called a prophet. Now, what is the main function of a prophet in the prophets?
To warn.
And
call to repentance.
And to return around, go the other direction. Now, Abimelech had a... He told her to repent, turn around. What he had to do? Return Sarah. Now, he had returned Sarah, though, with restitutions. We'll get to that restitution, explain a little about servants on that part, because it's part of the restitution. All right? So we look at it. Let's go to verse 2, the next verse. But two men remained in the camp, and the name of one was Eliad, and the name of the other was Medad. And the Spirit, the same Spirit that he was upon Moses, is now upon them. Now they were among those listed, but who had not gone to the tabernacle, yet they prophesied. And this is what happened. A young man ran and told Moses, said, Eldad and Medad are prophesying in the camp. So there's one of the very rare corrections that Joshua got corrected on. Joshua was really a nice, loyal, dedicated man to Moses, but this is one of the times that he said, what do you want me to do? He says, I'll tell you what, I'm going to forbid him. Tell him he can't do it. Moses, just give me the command. I'll tell him he can't do it anymore. Right? Now, what did Moses say? Moses said to them, Are you zealous for my sake? All that all the Yahweh's or Elohim, the Lord's people were prophets, listen, that the Yahweh would put his Spirit on them. That's how you become a prophet. A lot of people in the modern 20th century, 21st century, 19th century, 1st century, whatever call them centuries, claim to be prophets of God. Let me tell you, proof of a prophet is God when God talks to you. If God doesn't talk to you, you're not a prophet. Every prophet that's written in the whole Tanakh, God spoke to them literally. Whether by dream or face to face, as he did with Moses, or anybody else. Wow. Moses was also called a prophet later, right? Remember why? What did he tell the people to do? Hear the word of the Lord. Change, repent, turn around. Now, at this point in time, we're at this place of Kadesh, a place of the spring of judgment. You see, a judgment was coming down. At this particular point in time, the Creator said to Abimelech, by the way, this is, I know you have the righteousness, you have a good right, you're an upright man, and your heart is right, and you have integrity. You have uprightness, you have decency about you. You have something that I know in your heart is decent person, you're a decent person, if I use that word now in modern English, right? Now, I said, now, was Abimelech aware of the creator of heaven and earth?
Yes,
he was. We have sometimes in our narrowness of our mind, we have in our thoughts that 377 years, the only person that had any knowledge of the creator of heaven and earth was Abraham and Sarah. But nobody else. Oh, Shem. Yeah, Shem had one. Who else? We have a picture. They all went pagan. They all went idiots. They all went horrible. They all went like Sodom and Gomorrah. They all went like everyone. They went crazy. But the truth is, they knew. Who else knew that went to war against God?
Nimrod.
Nimrod knew. He knew who the creator of heaven and earth was. You read your scriptures, you know what it says, and we've gone through that before. So we're not talking about a bunch of paganologies here. We're talking people that have actually turned, either rebelled against God, or they're like people like you and me, maybe your next door neighbor, maybe your friend, maybe your fellow worker, who believes it's a God. And they're not out there to challenge God, not out there to attack God, not out there to be evil against God. They may not know God, or God has not let himself be known unto them, as it says there, but they knew there is a God. Yes?
Well, with Abimelech, it's quite possible that he knew who Abraham was when he came into town and who the God of Abraham was, whether he knew the God of Abraham personally. Abraham had a pretty good reputation at that point in his life.
God doesn't speak to very many people. In the history of mankind, he did not speak to very many people. Adam, Eve, Cain,
Abel.
Right?
Abel.
Well, he didn't say he spoke to Abel, but we know we're assuming that. Okay, let's go on to the next one.
Samuel.
We have Noah, right?
Samuel,
that's a little later down the line, right? I'm talking about this point in time. So God's not a conversationalist. He didn't come down and talk with people very often. He wants us to, and I hope I'll be able to explain this next Shabbat, to learn to live by what he says. All right, which is written. And of course, Abimelech says, what's going on here, Abraham? What have you done? Why are you doing this? Why did you come in here and play a little trick on me? Why did you tell me it was your wife? You know? This is Abraham's response, verse 11. Well, I thought, surely, the fear of Elohim, or in sense El Shaddai, was not in this place, and they will kill me on account of my wife. Now, why would he say that?
Well, Sodom didn't have to
say that. Right. Sodom was really fresh on their world and their mind. What happened in Sodom? They were wiped out. Surely, evidence that God is not feared in Sodom and Gomorrah, and he wasn't. He was made a mockery of. Sodom and Gomorrah made a mockery of God. And what happens when you mock God? You're a dead man. Well, not a real serious one. I mean, he got burnt up. This guy did not get burnt up. He not only repented, he just changed his whole thinking process really quick. And so, in a sense, Abraham was corrected. In a sense. But he says, well, yes, she is my sister. Because, see, Abraham did not know that it was a righteous place. Abraham did not know that Abimelech was a righteous man. He didn't know that. Now, he said, did he know him? We don't know. But they probably weren't acquaintances. They probably knew of each other because Gerar was a secondary trading route. After Sodom and Gomorrah was damaged, the trading route shifted westward through Gerar, was born in the plains, and they could continue on the tree. They just ignored this dead area that was completely burnt up. They avoided it like a plague. And remember, I don't know if you ever saw this or not, but Wyatt, I can't remember his first name, went through and found the ashes. And found the coals, the brimstone, which is the only place the face of earth is like this. No place you have it. Don't hold your hand; it'll burn. Anyway, I know what you're talking about. But we have this prob here, and lo and behold, I bet that thing was still smoldering. You know, we sometimes think, oh, it just burnt up overnight. I bet it took a long time to burn that down and burn to nothing, and they probably still saw the smoke. And maybe they saw the smoke for several weeks, several months, we don't know. But see, we look back and we say, oh, yeah, it burnt up, smoke went, blazed up, goodbye. But it was a witness scene to everybody, all the community around about them, from Beersheba all the way north, well past where Abraham was at, far east, into where Lot moved, finally eastward, into what we call the land of Moab, and the land of, well, actually the land of Moab. So we have here, and it's a very interesting thing to note that, oh, wow. And he did, of course, return. Now, he says, because I thought you should have fear. Now, there's an interesting question back here. So I'll answer this question real quickly. Verse 13, it came to pass that when Elohim, or El Shaddai, caused me to wander from my father's house, that I said to her, she is my kinness, but she's not really, she is my sister, basically. I want to go back down here real quickly. And he said, now, and Abimelech took sheep, oxen, male and female servants, and gave them to Abraham, and he restored Sarah to his wife. So when he gave all of this produce, all this, the sheep and the oxen, he had to give servants to help take care of those sheep and the oxen and the produce. That's what he did. Back in those days, we think that's right. No, he gave it to whom?
Abraham.
He gave it to a what? The eternal said, he is a prophet. Oh. Now all of a sudden the picture changes. The prophet's more important than a king. Isn't that not true with King David? The prophet outspeaks the king. The king is to listen to the prophet. The prophet is not to listen to the king. Now it means the spirit of the eternal was upon Abraham. And therefore, what does God want you to do when you do something you shouldn't do, even though it was done in ignorance? You must restore. You must pay. You must pay something, just like it says in the Torah, in the book of Leviticus. Even an unknown thing. But when you come to know that you have sinned, they didn't know you have sinned, guess what? You must pay more than you did before of the unknown one. And so we have an example from the very beginning, and he gave it to Abraham. Can I ask a little, some of your questions? I hope so. I got to drop down here. Daniel brought this up, and it's kind of funny, verse 17. If you remember this, when he talked about this before. So Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech and his wife. And his female servants, that they may become... He had to heal Abimelech? Why did he have to heal Abimelech for? I thought it was just the women. There's something wrong with Abimelech too. We don't know what it is. You can put words in there. You've got to figure out what it may mean. But it's very fascinating here, because the next chapter, although the next verse, although it is addressing women, the word is, and the Lord had closed up the womb of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. You know what that closed up means? Means literally to enclose.
Okay.
And it can mean really closing it off. And you can't even go to the bathroom. You go that far. And so, whoa, wow, healed. Healed from what? What was Amalek's illness? Well, something that God did to him, and he did to his wife, and he did to the women of his servants. Man, he closed, he literally held back. Another word for that word is to hold back something. Oh, that's still a little bit different than just they closed up the womb. It's holding something back. I don't know what it is. I'm not going to question what it is. But I think it's kind of funny, that Hebrew phrase of, he closed it up, sealed it off. Wow, you know. And why did Amalek be healed for? Yes, and his wife.
I think what might have been closed up is their love and compassion Because like the root of that word is love and compassion,
right,
and mercy and cherishing and this kind of thing. So maybe the whole household, the women, because you notice it wasn't the men. It's like the, you know, Abimelech, his wife, and the female servants. This is the thing about the male servants.
No,
so
just him.
I wonder if this was just PMS run amok.
I don't know. It's comical nonetheless. I grant you, it's funny. Yes.
Yeah, I have to be careful how I phrase this. There is a rabbinic teaching that understands this as being that the men were not able to perform their marital duties.
No, it might be
and
with
so
Emma.
In but... that way, both of everybody was affected. There was a severe lack of libido.
Yeah, right. Yes. That's funny. You know, but we don't have a full ass of everything, but when he closes it up and stops and holds it back, he really stops and holds it back. And he had to heal.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we can speculate what it means. We don't know what it means.
Yeah.
As all sorts of people have different ideas what it means. It's kind of funny, nonetheless. But it's fine to find that Abimelech had to be healed. That's a funny terminology. Yes.
Well, I'd have to be healed if the Creator showed up in a dream and said, "You're a dead man.
Life will not come from you anymore." Okay. All right. Any questions? Any thoughts? Any idea? We're finished that. Yes.
It's interesting that he's married to his sister, his father's sister, which is later in Leviticus pointed out as a no-no.
Correct.
But it was, yeah.
We're talking, I mean, in the very beginning, Cain had to marry his sister, and Shem had to marry his sister, and on down the line, you know. That's a little different story. Later, as the genealogy changed, he started separating them. Now, why would he start separating them? God started separating things, and we get in the book of Leviticus. Now he's separating it. First, he separated all of Israel from the rest of the world, right? And then he began side of Israel, start separating Israel more and more. So he separated them for his reason, for his purpose. We don't have all the answers yet. And we don't need to know all the answers. But we see that Gary gets narrowing down, and it's finer and finer and finer. All the way now that the ones who are being called of God, all the Father's doing the drawing and nobody else.